Heritage Day player on 720 WGN. So that theme has introduced generations of fans to the golden age of radio for over 50 years. Now, Nostalgia Digest magazine is celebrating its winter issue with stories about the iconic Humphrey Bogart, in addition to a conversation with the legendary Carol Burnett, articles about Mel Blanc, the man of a thousand voices, songwriter Johnny Mercer, holiday entertainment from the golden age of television, and much, much more. And to talk about it all is Editor-in-Chief Steve Darnall. What's going on, Steve?
Well, David, you've described a lot of what's going on there, but we're doing great and very, very glad to be with you, as always.
Absolutely. I always say this to you in person and on the show, that when I get the magazine, it truly is a nice escape for me. I always learn a lot, and, you know, with all the news feeds we get every 5 seconds and social media and everything else, it's just a time to just open it up, sit down, and learn something new about the golden age of entertainment.
Well, I appreciate your saying that. I mean, obviously, you know, it's imperative that all of us be engaged as part of the citizenry in modern-day America, and that's important. But I appreciate, yes, we live in a world where you can really be bludgeoned with it 24 hours a day if you're not careful. And I think it was Paul McCartney who said something like, you know, he didn't mind being somebody's aspirin.
Right. Yeah, I think that's great. Yeah, it's a great. You know, I love that.
And yes, if it gives somebody, I mean, I think about when I was in college and I was between studying for this exam and studying for that one, and I had 20 minutes, so I'd read a comic book or something. And it's like, yeah, if you can come up with something that allows people to recharge their batteries and then, you know, get back into the fray, I think that's, I'm think it's an important thing to be able to do, and if that turns out to be the case, I'm really grateful for that.
Well, I want to plug this for you because it's going to make a great gift if you want to buy a 1-year subscription, which brings you 64-page an issue to your door for only $19. A 2-year subscription brings you 8 issues for $34. You get the digital copy as well, and NostalgiaDigest.com is the website where you can find everything. And this magazine has a story about Humphrey Bogart, which just a film legend.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things we've always been grateful for is to have writers who know their subject and are passionate about their subjects. And obviously, when it comes to somebody like Humphrey Bogart, you know, one might think, well, what is there left to write? But our writer, Stone Wallace, is his name, and he sent us this terrific piece about an aspect of Humphrey Bogart's career that is the one probably that made him famous, and it's probably the one that, in retrospect, he would like to have, you know, had the least attention drawn to, and that was his time as a movie gangster, you know? And
right.
We thought, my gosh, you know, it was a fascinating example of looking at somebody whose career we all think we know pretty well and finding a new way to talk about it. And we're always lucky when those articles come in, and we're always grateful for the chance to run them.
You know, I host the Sinatra Hours on Sunday mornings at 7, and I always try to find a Frank Sinatra connection somehow, but Bogart was really the original Rat Pack, you know, which Lauren Bacall named. Bogey and Bacall became one of the most iconic romantic partnerships in Hollywood history, but they were that social circle which Frank would popularize in his movies. But Frank worshipped Bogart. Like, you know, it was a big deal, and I think he actually pursued Lauren Bacall after Humphrey Bogart passed away. He was so obsessed with him as an actor, but that connection with Humphrey is pretty strong because of the Rat Pack. And here's the other thing. I read this somewhere. He was the last actor to win an Oscar who was born in the 19th century. So when he won...
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, he was born on Christmas Day in 1899, and he won Best Actor Oscar for his role in The African Queen in 1951. He, you know, was nominated for Casablanca and the Caine Mutiny and didn't win, but... Yeah, last person born in the 19th century that won an Oscar. Look at me with the trivia today.
Well, hey, that's all right. That's actually something you won't find in our article, so I'm glad we're discussing it. Because, yes, then if you get our article, you can read all about the making of The Petrified Forest and Dead End and the amazing Dr. Clitterhouse and all those things that... You know, because when a lot of people, when we think of Bogart now, you're right, we think of Casablanca, we think of African Queen or Maltese Falcon, which are genuinely iconic films, you know, and that was really, for Humphrey Bogart, the culmination of a career that in movies that had started a decade earlier. when he was doing films like The Petrified Forest and Three on a Match, and just almost relentlessly playing gangsters and hoodlums.
Absolutely,
you know? And it really, it wore thin on him pretty quickly, but, you know, thankfully when he got roles like High Sierra and The Maltese Falcon, he made the most of them, and now it's almost impossible to think about Humphrey Bogart without thinking of those roles. So
no question.
He was an amazing talent.
You also have an article, Conversation with the Great Carol Burnett. I mean, just honestly, one of my favorites. Tell us a little bit of what we're going to see here.
Oh, sure. Well, Carol Burnett, of course, you're right. An absolute icon. I mean, I grew up watching her on Saturday nights. I'm sure a lot of your audience did.
Yep.
And I'd wanted to talk with Carol Burnett for a long time about her early television career. I mean, obviously, when she's on shows, well, I think she's even been on your show, I think, and obviously people want to talk about the Carol Burnett show, and that's great, and I appreciate that. I figured she'd told everybody that story, and of course she's written books about that show. But what I really was eager to talk to her about was her time before that, when she was a regular on the Gary Moore show. And of course, we went through channels, and she really seemed to jump at the chance to talk about Gary Moore, who was her mentor.
Yeah, very much.
And you know, an entertainer who might otherwise be forgotten today, which is a shame because he was incredibly popular. He was a fixture on television throughout the 50s and into the 1960s. He and his announcer Durward Kirby were frequent guests on the Carol Burnett show in its early years, and once we started talking about that, and she had so many wonderful stories about working in live television, about how she came to be a part of the Gary Moore show, about how she was dividing her time between television and Broadway, and those are the things that she talks about in this issue. And like I say, we were really, really grateful to have the chance to talk with her because, you know, like I say, we have such great respect for her, and I figured she would appreciate the fact that somebody was asking up front about Gary Moore, and we were right in that respect. And of course, as you know, too, as an interviewer yourself, once you tap into something that someone's really eager to talk about, everything else kind of flows more freely from there, even if you go back to questions they've been asked a million times before.
But you're right about Gary Moore, and she really puts him on a pedestal because he really set the tone for variety shows, even contemporary variety shows through maybe the 70s, the 60s, 70s, and 80s, he laid that groundwork. I mean, he was putting on pretty much a Broadway live show every single week.
That's true, and you're right. It really was a direct influence on Carol Burnett's own variety show in terms of structure and style, and even to the point where her first producer suggested, why don't you start the show by going out and asking the audience if they have any questions? And it's like, well, you can't imagine the Carol Burnett show without that now, but that was a terrifying prospect in 1967. But again, both of them knew from working with Gary Moore that that's the sort of thing that could work really well, and that if you were worried about what you would say if someone asked you a question you weren't expecting, you'd come up with something, and it would usually be great. And you're right, and there was a lot of television variety in the 1950s, as you point out, but Gary Moore really was had a unique sort of template. You know, he wasn't out there like a Sid Caesar being, you know, the comedic front man.
Right, right.
He was this really nice, low-key, smart personality who
let other people
understood
shine.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Who would put talent on and let that talent do what it needed to do.
We're talking to Steve Darnall of Nostalgia Digest magazine, Nostalgia Digest. .com, and there's more with him next on 720 WGN. Stay player on 720 WGN. We're talking to Steve Darnall on the winter edition of Nostalgia Digest magazine. Some more great things in the magazine this quarter. Mel Blanc, been gone a long time already, but I will tell you, you are right when you say a man of a thousand voices.
Yeah, it's incredible to look back and think about everything Mel Blanc did in his career, which took him right up to the end of his life, practically. And, you know, when he left in 1989, I know he was terribly missed, but now with the benefit of hindsight, we can look back and see everything that he did, both in cartoons and in movies and television, but also, of course, in radio, where he appeared frequently with some of the top comedy performers of the day, you know, Jack Benny and Burns and Allen and Abbott and Costello. Yeah, we had a really nice article about a remarkable time in Mel Blanc's life, and I'm hoping people will check out the issue, because it's a really fascinating story about something that you know, that demonstrates just how attuned to these voices Mel Blanc was, even in his personal life.
You're absolutely right. I mean, you know, 700 characters almost at Warner Brothers alone for 40 years. I mean, his stories are deep. There's one thing I read about him once. I think I saw it on David Letterman, and I have a clip I'm going to play. He smoked a pack a day from when he was eight or nine years old till he was in his 60s or 70s or whatever it might be, because he got emphysema at the end of his life. That's how he passed away. But he was smoking since he was a kid, I guess, whatever, back then. But, you know, when you think about all those Warner Brothers cartoons, it took 16,000 drawings to make a six-minute cartoon, 15 months to make it. Like, you think about how quickly you could turn over a three-minute animation piece today. You know, to go through that process for one cartoon is crazy. But yeah, Mel Blanc is a legend. Mel Blanc was a frequent guest on Late Night and David Letterman in the early 80s. And we've got a great clip that'll really highlight the legacy of Mel Blanc.
What's up, David?
That's a great sweater you have there.
Oh, thank you very much. I like it, too.
Yeah. Now, that's not your actual voice, is it?
No, I have a very deep voice.
Do you remember the first voice that you did?
Yes, I do. I remember the first voice I did.
Now, that's your real voice right there.
This is my real voice, yeah. The first voice I ever did was this. I don't remember it, but that was the first voice.
So aside from the list of folks, or list of characters that we mentioned in the introduction, what others have you been responsible for?
Well, there's Yosemite Sam. That's a real raucous cowboy. And, of course, there's Pepe Le Pew. He's the little French skunk. He kisses the pussycat. And Foghorn, pay attention, David, a Foghorn Leghorn. That big rooster, he talks like that, you know. You looking for chicken? You see that little house over there? It says D-O-G. That spells chicken. Go get him, boy.
How do you go about creating a voice? Do you get a voice and then say, draw something to go along with this? Or do they come to you and say...
They show me a picture of the character. And then they say, they show me a storyboard, which shows what the character's going to do in the cartoon. From this, I have to create the voice. Like Bugs, they said, was a tough little stinker. So I thought, which is the toughest voice in this country, either Brooklyn or the Bronx?
So you put the two of them together. That's how I got the voice for Bugs, Doc.
And Porky, they said, was a timid little character. So I went out to a pig farm and wallowed around with the pigs. I wanted to be authentic. And when I went back to the studio, they kicked me out and said, go home and take a bath. Which I did. When I come back, they said, I said, if a pig could talk, he'd talk with a grunt. You know, oink, 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 oink.
That's why Porky got his voice. With a grunt.
Now, you've done 5,000 voices? Is that possible?
No, I've worked in 5,000 different cartoons. And actually, I do about 400 different voices. And in each dialect, you can do many different voices.
Yeah, do you have any that, there must be some that are similar in the 400 that you've done?
No. They're not similar. I mean, you can recognize each one differently. Like in one picture I show in my college speeches, there's all Italian. Like Columbus discovers America along with Bugs Bunny.
And Columbus, he talks it down here, you see. He talks in Italian, a dialect like it is. And Bugs, he talks to the world, and she's around, I think.
And various, you can do different voices and different dialects.
Yeah.
And that was the great Mel Blanc on Late Night with David Letterman. Let's talk a little bit about songwriter Johnny Mercer.
Again, another figure who, you know, people know to some degree, and we were really glad for the chance to shine a light on some aspects of his career, and of course some of the many songs he had a hand in. You know, talk about, you know, Mel Blanc was the man of a thousand voices. Johnny Mercer was literally the man of a thousand songs. I think he had a hand in writing or co-writing over a thousand songs, and collaborating with the likes of Henry Mancini and Harold Arlen and Hoagy Carmichael and Duke Ellington. And that's one of the things that I think that's fascinating about getting to do a publication like Nostalgia Digest, is that there are times when you can put the spotlight on somebody from 60 or 70 or 80 years ago who might be lost to the mists of time otherwise. And we've certainly done that, and I think to some degree we might even have done it in this issue with, like, the article about Carlton E. Morse, the creator of One Man's Family. But then you can put the spotlight on somebody who, for whatever reason, hasn't disappeared completely. And that's equally fascinating, because you realize, you talk about somebody like Johnny Mercer, you know, a lot of his contemporaries are not as well remembered, even though they wrote great songs. But Johnny Mercer, as a singer and as a composer, you know, you remember Accentuate the Positive, and you remember Small Fry, and you remember that old Black Magic, and One for My Baby and One for the Road. You know, those are songs that have outlasted virtually every trend that was supposedly going to come along and blast them away.
Yeah, right.
And we're still singing those songs today, and that's a tribute to the idioms that Johnny Mercer employed in his lyrics. And, it's always wonderful to put the spotlight on somebody like that who you think, wow, you know, I'll bet they didn't think we'd be having this conversation about
right.
them 40 years after their passing.
Yeah, how cool is that? No, I love that. I love that. And you also got perfect timing. You got a holiday, article about the golden age of television, those entertainment, the shows, the variety shows and things that we had from back in the day during the holidays. A 1-year subscription, again, of Nostalgia Digest magazine. That's 4 issues to your door for $19. 2-year subscription is 8 issues for $34. And you can go to nostalgiadigest.com. for all the details. Always a pleasure, Steve, and happy holidays to you and yours.
Dave, thank you so much. If I may add that the Digest is also available in a digital format for the very first time, and we're incredibly excited. And David, thank you. Have a great holiday. Thanks for all of your hospitality.
You too, buddy. All right, take care. All right, news is next here on 720 WGN.